Your dreams, ambitions, and priorities are what make you unique. With Associated Bank Private Wealth, we've got you. Our personalized approach to wealth planning puts your goals at the center of your plan. Visit associatedbank.com/privatewealth. Member FDIC.
We're on with Jake Braun, Portfolio Manager in Associated Bank's Wealth Management and Institutional Services. Jake, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
I want to focus first on inflation. Inflation in November accelerated to 2.7%. It's above the Fed's 2% threshold. Talk to us a little bit about what's happening with inflation. Why has it been so hard to tame and bring down?
Yeah, I think the story is kind of a good one, actually, Steve, because our economy has been running pretty hot. Growth is still right around 3%, which is higher than really the average going back to 2000. When you just have that much economic activity going on, I think that's been the thing that's kept this number from falling back to that 2% target. At the same time, though, that headline number, like you said, 2.7%, it's pretty close to 2%, but it's also been pretty volatile. So remember, that was the number that spiked to 9% in the summer of 2022. I think that it's time's getting away from me here, but ever since, that number has come down closer to target, but that headline number fell actually pretty quick. In fact, that's about where it was at. You know, it's not that much lower than June of 2023. So a year and a half ago, we've been jumping around this 2-3% number. But remember, that headline number takes into account energy and food prices, which have been very volatile. And when you strip those away and you look at just the core number, you actually see a little bit of a different story. The peak for core was about 6.5%, not 9%. And it's been slower to fall compared to that headline number, but it's been much more orderly, and now it's about 3.3%. So although the core number, which the Fed actually treats as more important, is a little farther away from inflation, it has been consistently falling. And I think what this really means is that the drop in inflation is still happening. It's just taking longer than we'd like. And I think, you know, when we look at the largest contributors, it's still shelter, which makes up the largest portion of the CPI. It's still growing about 4.5% over the last year, just 0.3% over the last month. There's a lot of apartments that have been being built, almost a record pace of building, and those are set to come online over the next year. So still some hope. We'll see downward pressure on rent prices and shelter prices. So yeah, it's going to take longer than we hoped, but I think looking at core, it tells a better story, which is we're still going in the right direction. It's just taking some time.
Yeah. And in addition to shelter, I think one of the highlights also was vehicle use. Vehicle prices were up and food costs were up a little bit. You know, I hear a lot from consumers about the cost of things, and they ask me the same question that I'll ask you, and that is, will these prices come down? Once they go up, they are really slow or hard to come down. Are we ever going to see things go back to what they were a couple of years ago?
No, I really don't think so. In fact, I don't have a crystal ball, but I'll tell you, I pray to God they don't. And I'll tell you why, because, you know, what we'd ideally like is for inflation to get back to that 2% target. Inflation is still price growth. So the thought of, can we get prices to actually lower back to where they were a few years ago? I mean, we've had all in prices have grown well over 30-40% in most cases since the COVID pandemic. So imagine a world in which the prices of most things shrink by 30-40%. I mean, imagine you're a company and your revenues fall by 30-40%. You're out of business. Now imagine that happens to all companies. You can quickly see how devastating this would be for companies. And I mean, no one's hiring people. You're probably out of business and cutting your workforce. I mean, this becomes a apocalyptic scenario for our economy when you kind of game this out. And that, I don't expect that to make anyone feel good, but it really is like the best case scenario is that we get prices to stop growing as much. We keep those wage gains growing around 4%, which they have been, by the way. And so that hopefully people's incomes can grow faster than costs. And then that way we can make people wealthier.
Yeah. Is it called deflation? And in a lot of cases, deflation is just as bad as inflation, right?
Yes. And again, I would say taken to its extremes, it can get a lot worse. So, yeah. And then what we want right now, not to confuse people, is disinflation, which is inflation that's lowering, going from 3% now to 2%. But yes, you're right. Deflation is kind of the boogeyman I'm talking about.
The Fed has suggested that perhaps it is going to slow the pace of cutting interest rates in 2025 because of the numbers, the inflation numbers that have been slow to come down. Do you think that's a good game plan?
Yeah. What with the stickiness of inflation, I mean, back in September when they did their 50 basis point cut, the expectation in the market was that we'd get a lot of cuts. That has since been dialed back. I think we're pretty much guaranteed today to get a 25 basis point cut. But then when we look at, going into June of next year, so 6 months from now, there's a lot of uncertainty. In fact, there is some thought that if inflation kicks up a little bit, maybe we get a 25 basis point hike. No, nobody really is pricing that in or expecting that, but you're getting to this point where the Fed really has to do an even balance between inflation down and keeping unemployment right where it's at. And so the kind of wait and see approach is back, but the general direction they'd still like to move is down. So occasional sporadic 25 basis point cut seems like the most likely scenario next year.
Jake, talk to us a little bit about how the stock market's going to end up in 2024. I know from looking at my own 401k, it looks pretty good. I think we're probably going to end on a positive note, but does that say anything about how we will transition into 2025?
Well, as far as 2024 goes, I mean, as long as you invested in U.S. stocks, you had almost a record year. Even the quote-unquote worst areas of small cap and mid cap stocks, or even small and mid cap value, were up almost double digits. Of course, if you are invested in those big tech companies, you were up over 30%. But that creates a bit of a burden, is how I would put it. Because when you look ahead, the question, and to your point, Steve, is can this continue? Part of a consequence of all this price growth has really been that we've taken expectations and ramp them up. And so when you look at how expensive the market is, so the price today versus the earnings we expect over the next year, that looks very expensive compared to history. And so not only are expectations built up, we've already priced in high expectations. And so we really need to see great news on earnings in order to justify current prices. And so the idea of how would you get another 10 to 20% increase in stocks next year, you would need reality to surpass high expectations. It's such an enormous bar that it's really, frankly, hard for me to see us doing next year what we did this year. And that echoes history. Typically, when valuations get very high like this, you just don't see the market following with record returns. That doesn't say that those expectations couldn't get met and justify the prices today, but I think it's when you price in this much growth, it's very hard to see 10, 20, 30% price growth back.
What would you say would be some of the headwinds going into 2025? I've heard different analysts say geopolitical, Trump tariffs, maybe something happening with the jobs market. Are those all on your radar screen as well?
Yeah. So, geopolitics to me, Steve, I think anytime you ask somebody to tell you what they see as a risk and they don't really know what to say, they just say geopolitical risk. I mean, I remember back being at some like investment lunches in 2018, 2017, North Korea was the biggest risk. And I'm not saying they weren't or they don't continue to be, but that always exists. You know, someone could push a big red button and throw the world into chaos at any moment. International risk is elevated right now. Certainly there's a lot more active conflicts. So sure, that's a risk that exists in the background. There's policy uncertainty with the new Trump administration. There's a lot of ideas being thrown around from some campaign promises, and we're going through some confirmations right now. And I think right now, a lot of the research we're looking at, the conversations we're having, we're trying to make sense out of what is likely, because how much tariffs and on whom will result. And right now, yeah, it seems uncertain, but there is a baseline risk that there might be a combination of high tariffs, maybe excessive government spending, or maybe not. You know, that's the thing is we're still waiting on some firm commitments here. But generally, at least as far as economic risks go, balance sheets for individuals and businesses are not at concerning levels, and spending is keeping up. Retail spending surprised to the upside in the most recent report a couple days ago. The big thing for me, Steve, is productivity. Productivity has been higher than history over the last four quarters. Productivity is really the magic sauce that can allow companies to see their revenue shrink, which is what happens when inflation comes down, see their labor costs go up, which is still true today, but still pass on these big earnings and profit growth that enrich their shareholders. As long as productivity growth keeps at this accelerated pace, I see no reason why we can't have strong 2 to 3% GDP growth. If that begins to fall, if companies just run out of tools at their disposal or levers to pull or ways to squeeze more juice from their operations to become more productive, then maybe these higher interest and labor costs begin to bite. And then, yeah, maybe you get into that layoff cycle that leads into a recession. That's kind of the big factor I'm looking at.
So I'm your client. You're my portfolio manager. What is my play heading into the new year? What should I be doing?
Your play is to go back to remind yourself what the purpose of the money, talk about how much risk is appropriate, and make sure that, you know, you're doing your what we agreed to, you know, following the plan that we designed from the jump. Right now, a lot of my clients have seen their equity exposure climb rapidly this year. And so we're doing a lot of rebalancing, trying to take some gains where we can, especially where we have some tax flexibility. But yeah, anytime you see the market leap this much over such a short amount of time, it's a good time to make sure you don't find yourself overexposed to stocks, rebalance a bit, and remind yourself that taking 5 to 6% returns in bonds is still a pretty nice deal.
All right. Jake, great conversation. As always, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Please email or call. My email is jacob.brond@associatedbank.com or give me a call, 414-278-1864.
All right, Jake. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.